miss any of the show? You can get Sheeman and Shepherd all the time with Sheeman and Shepherd On Demand. Available on 99.3ESPN.com and iTunes. This is Sheeman and Shepherd.
Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. We'll get back to making fun of O.J. Simpson later following his tweet. We have been keeping an eye and an ear on the SEC Media Day, the SEC kickoff. Let's tune back in with the SEC Network. Jimbo Fisher is speaking, the head coach of Texas A&M. He's at the dais. Sheeman and Shepherd on 99.3 ESPN.
Players are approaching it, and how we don't have to make and correct a lot of things as coaches. Our players and our upperclassmen are doing a great job with the leadership and of the guys we have here today, Kellen Mond, Justin Matabuke, and Braden Mann. Those guys would be some small examples of that, but there's a lot of that going on right now in creating the culture. In this league, you better have culture and be able to win and expect to win, because everybody has good players. So from that standpoint, but I'm very proud of it, of our team and the things we've been able to accomplish and where we've been so far, and looking forward to this year. We got a tremendous schedule, and as I say, you always do in this league, and that's one of the things that makes this league what it is. Well, it's the best league in football, and it's fun to get into and compete and do what we have to do. So we're looking forward to those challenges coming up. Thank you.
All right, Coach, thank you. If you have a question, please raise your hand. We'll have Amanda, Jordan, or Sarah. We're going to start right in front of me on the second row.
Hey, Coach. Jeffrey Winborn with the Daily Mountain Eagle. Texas coach Tom Herman has expressed an interest in reviving the Texas-Texas A&M rivalry.
Yes.
Citing games like Clemson, South Carolina, Florida, Florida State. Mm-hmm. Is that something you likewise are interested in?
Say yes.
Yeah, I mean, if it's beneficial to Texas A&M. I know we're scheduled out right now for 10 years, so if it's something that benefits Texas A&M, we would definitely be interested in that and make those judgments as they come.
Okay, Coach, we'll go on our right,
not
down the
answer.
Aisle, just straight ahead on the left, way
sounds
in the
like
back. Please stand. Please stand right back here.
Please, all rise.
Get sir, up. You've got the mic. Yeah, please stand.
Cecil Hurt from the Tuscaloosa News.
Come on, hey. Cecil.
Hey, Jimbo. You play the teams that will likely be ranked in some order, 1, 2, 3, in the poll, Clemson, Alabama, and Georgia. If I were to refer to Texas A&M as a spoiler, would you consider that encouraging or condescending?
Condescending. Nah. We don't want to spoil anything. We want to take care of our own. And they are great teams, but we expect to play with them and compete with them and win those games. That's why we're here. And we're not looking to spoil anything. We're looking to win something and to go handle our business and do the things we have to do. They are great programs, but Texas A&M can be the same way. And we have to go play and improve ourselves and do the things we have to do. But I think we're definitely on that track.
Coach, we'll go back to the center section right here in front of us. Second row.
Drew DeArmond, WCZN Radio, Huntsville, Alabama. Coach, I know Travion Williams was a huge part of your success last year leading the SEC in rushing. Wherever you've been, you've always run the ball well. Give us an update on where your running game is and some guys maybe to watch out for in the fall.
I think, first of all, it starts up front. I think our offensive line, we have five guys that have started multiple games, over double-digit games, that are coming back with a great group of young guys coming in. I think Jayshon Corbin behind him, the young freshman last year, averaged over 6 yards a carry guy. He's a very talented guy. He can catch it. He can run with power, speed, agility. And again, Travion's a guy. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was third in the country, led the SEC in rushing, over 1,700 yards. I mean, to say, you don't ever replace those guys, but that's a standard in which it's set. And I think Jayshon is a hard worker. And I think behind that, with Kabote as a tailback and Prince and those guys, we have a great group of guys. Cordarian Richardson, Isaiah Spiller coming in. We like our backs and where we're at. And I also think Glenn Beal, like our tight end, is a very good blocker, and our young tight ends are. So, yeah, I believe you have to be physical in this league to be successful, and you have to run that football. So we'll continue to do it, and I feel very comfortable where we're at right now.
Listening to Jimbo Fisher on 99.3 ESPN.
Hey, Coach. Tom Murphy, Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Wanted to get your thoughts on 1 year of the transfer portal, what you thought of how that worked, and what role it plays in building your roster. And second, Nick Starkel transferred to Arkansas, and you're going to face him in conference, in division. Your thoughts on him, and what kind of player he is, what Arkansas is getting there.
Well, first of all, Nick is an outstanding person. He's an outstanding player. He has great arm talent. He can throw it. He thinks. He's had great success in this league, and Nick's one heck of a player, and he's going to be an extremely tough guy to go against. There's no doubt about that, and I have nothing but respect for him. He's a class young man. To say the transfer portal, I think the biggest thing that we're getting to, and that whether you transfer, whether you're in a portal, you're transferring, however it goes, the thing about it is I think you got to get consistency on how you rule things and when guys are eligible and not eligible and all that. And I think that's the thing that we're all searching for. When we know what is the rule, just like that, I think we've done a great job with the targeting rules now. I think they're extremely defined. So I think how you coach things, how you look at things, I think is great. And I think it's the same way with the transfer. The guys transfer all the time. There's no disrespect or anything in transfers because guys' situations change and all that happens. But you have to have a set of rules for it. And I think that's what we're getting to. And I think it'll enhance it that much more.
Coach, we're going to go down in front of me about five rows back.
Gentry, SS Louisville Courier Journal. Coach, how do you feel like the, now that you've been through it a couple years, how the early signing period has changed how you go about recruiting, the cost of it, the time, and has it been a good thing for the sport?
I mean, I think it is from a standpoint of, you can get that done. Having that done after coming after a bowl game and going back and not knowing you have to go sign your whole class and having most of that done. Now, once you get to that point after a bowl game and after January, it's great. Before that, it's tough as heck. Those 2 or 3 weeks, and especially when you come in the first year of it, I'm a new coach coming in with 3 weeks to try to scratch and claw and get a class together and get them to know me. That's tough, but I do think it's a good thing. I will say recruiting now with the visits in the spring, you know, of April, May, and June, man, it's made it's tough on a coach right now. The time and spent when every weekend's a recruiting weekend and what's going on and you're out there spring recruiting and you're coming home for visits, it's the assistant coaches thing. I mean, they take a pound and now it's really tough, but it's here to stay and I don't think it's ever going back. I like it. I think it's something that was needed, but it's a very tough time and it's strenuous. There's no doubt about it.
Coach, we'll go over on the left section. Mike, all the way in the back.
Mike Bianchi, Orlando Sentinel.
Hey,
Coach,
Mike.
How are you doing?
Good, Mike. How are you, buddy?
Coach, you won so many games at Florida State. You won a national title. Does it bother you or hurt you that in that recent Bleacher Report article that FSU's administration's blaming you for some of the woes?
And in this business, you learn to you have tough skin. You know the circumstances of everything that happens and how it happens, and that's part of this business. People are going to say and write things, and you know what goes on, and you move on. Listen, I had nothing but respect for my time at Florida State. It's a phenomenal place, and those players and kids and everyone that was there, and I had a great time. We had great success, and I wish them nothing but the best. And you know, you move on about your business and you go on, and they'll be very successful. I know that's a great program.
You like Bobby Bowden.
Okay, we'll go back to the back of the center section.
Listen to Jimbo Fisher's press conference. Sheehan and Shepherd, 99.3 ESPN.
How much was the LSU win last year for you guys sets your program ahead for this season? And do you feel like there's a rivalry kind of budding with you with, you know, Scott Woodward coming over and, you know, between y'all's two border states and recruiting and all that at this point?
Yeah, if I can get Scott coaching and not A-Ding, I'd be better. No, it is. I think that, and that used to be a rivalry, and I think it is. I mean, we're so close, and I mean, you had one of the epic games in college football history. It was very unique, and I think it will butt into rivalry. And rivalries come when both teams are good. And I think, you know, I think we're building our program to be good. LSU's established itself as a great program, and I think that's how rivalries are made. I mean, just like now everybody talks about the LSU-Alabama rivalry. Well, that wasn't a rival when we first went to LSU years ago. And then it evolved, and Alabama come back, and that's how you had two good programs that evolved into that. And I think that's what's happening here. LSU's established. We're establishing ourselves as a great program. And, you know, and the more rivalries and the more emotions you have in college football, I think that's what makes it such a great game. And, you know, it'd be very tough, and, you know, they're always a great opponent. So it's going to make it fun and where we're going forward. But, yes, to answer your question, I think it was huge for our team to be able to get through that. I think after the second half of the Ole Miss game and the UAB, and I think the way we finished, I think that was very big for our program and helped us establish. And I think it helped us, our kids and players, to understand the way we practice, the way we prepare, the way we have the offseason, how those things all come into play in games of that significance, no doubt.
Coach, we'll go over to our left, second row, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Jimbo. Bob Holt, Arkansas Democrat. I had a two-part question. I think Nick Saban's former assistants are on 16.
Sit down!
It's been seven or eight
I've
guys.
Never ever heard that before.
And he doesn't seem to be showing any signs of slowing down, even though I think he's 67. Do you think eventually one of you guys or more is going to beat him? What's it going to take? And the second question, can Kevin O'Prior help you remember this? With the 7 OTs, you know, the NCAA changed the rule that after 4, you got to start going for 2. You don't go to the 25. What do you think about that rule change?
I mean, from that rule change part of it, I think it's very good. I mean, But, you know, you're changing a rule for something that happens, what, 3% of the time or 4% of the time that it's ever happened. But at the same time, I understand why they did it for player safety, that if that was to happen to be in the middle of the season, you have to come back the very next week and prepare. That has a huge effect on how you have to prepare and the amount of playing that your kids did that week going into the next week and all that. I get that and I understand it. The good thing about that, we'll always have the longest game, the highest scoring game, and everything's good. So we'll get to keep the record. But as far as Nick goes, I mean, yeah, what is it going to take? It's going to take 60 minutes of football. Listen, we all know Alabama's established itself as a great program. Nick is a great coach. What it's going to take is 60 minutes of great football. You have to line up and play. And more importantly, you have to expect to win the game. Don't hope to win it. You got to expect to win. You got to win the game prepared, knowing that you can win it and play it and perform and execute. And don't worry about winning the game. Before you win it, you got to play it. And I think that's the key. Don't worry about winning it. Worry about playing well in the game, performing, making the plays when you have to, and then you'll get the results you want. But you know, they've established themselves, and they deserve it. And but, you know, we'll see in time.
Coach, we'll go to the right section, near aisle, third row.
Peter Baugh, I cover Mizzou for The Athletic. Mm-hmm. Kelly Bryant last year played against you guys. What did that game in College Station show about him?
I mean, I think, first of all, the kind of team player he is, because he was a starter the year before, and then they were subbing back and forth with him and Trevor Lawrence, and then he come back in the game and played very well and made the plays and the drives in which they were able to win that football game. But I think it shows his team morale and camaraderie and the kind of guy he was, and also the winner he was. He's a heck of a player, and I think he'll do very well for Mizzou, that's for sure.
Okay, we'll go to the center section over here on the left side in the back.
SEC Media Days.
Jimbo Brooks again,
Jimbo
from the
Fisher.
Advocate.
Mm-hmm.
How do you and your assistant coaches approach the NCAA transfer portal just as far as building a roster management? Do you guys take a look at it and look through things? Or how?
Yeah,
how
we have people who manage it and see who's in it and what's going on. If people contact us or somebody, we'd be in. You know, to say you don't ever take them, you do take them. Don't want to build your program from them, because you can't do it that way. You have to build your program from what you recruit and how you develop guys. But if there's a guy out there and he makes contact, and nowadays that's part of the process you're going about. I mean, transferring is, it's like free agency. I mean, that's kind of what's coming out. If there's a guy out there that you think can help you and provide a need, it's big. But, you know, that's part of it. You have to manage that part of it, and you don't expect it. But it's something you have to always be aware of and plan for if you see those guys come available, how you recruit and do other things.
Okay, we'll stay in the center section, this time on the right aisle in the back of the room.
Yes, sir. Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. Coach, Mike Elko was somebody who was pursued by a variety of people, and you know, you're probably going to have to deal with this on a yearly basis. How big a part is he of what you're trying to build, and how difficult is that task to keep him on board?
I don't think the task to keep him on board is that tough, because I think you look at A&M and what we have and what we're building and the players we have coming, and he knows what the future of this program is going to be, and Mike wants to do that for sure. And he's a big part of it because, listen, Mike's one of the best defensive coordinators in college football. This guy does a great job. He knows how to play the run, pass, does all the different things. Our kids love him. He's a hard worker. Philosophically, he and I believe a lot of the same things. And when we were going in, and now we've adapted that to how we want to do things and how I want things done, and he is a total team guy. And he gets it, and I think he's a tremendous coach and has a tremendous future in this business.
Coach, we'll go all the way back left near the banner in the back.
Coach, what do you remember about Jake Bentley, seeing him last season at South Carolina, and also just your scouting report on Will Muschamp as a basketball player?
You said Jake Bentley?
Yes.
Jake was a heck of a player, had great arm talent. I knew Jake as a youngster in high school. I mean, can throw it. And being a coach's son, he knows the game. He's tough. He can make all the throws. He stands in the pocket. I mean, he's a guy that I think will play on Sundays. I think the guy's a heck of a player. I really do. Muschamp is a basketball player. So he accused me and Nick of cheating all the time, that we were always on the thing. So, but I remember one time we did kind of take Will in the wall, mess his ankle up a little bit. What we did, those games got very physical, that's for sure. Nick was always on the other side. It was Nick and myself, and then whoever. We got whoever with us and then played against those guys. But he was a good athlete. Will was a good athlete. He really was.
All right, we'll go down here on the left side again.
But we were undefeated.
Over here, Bob.
Hey, Jim. Bob Holtargen, South Democrat Gazette again. Hey, there could be up to, I think, 5 grad transfers be starting SEC quarterbacks this season. Do you see that trend continuing? Do you see especially why quarterbacks transfer when they lose their starting job? And could you envision yourself having a grad transfer, you know, starting quarterback?
He redeemed himself with a better question.
You have to manage that position differently, because it's the one position where basically one guy plays, And I think that's just a trend when quarterbacks, or they get a backlog or they see someone that wins a job, they're going to transfer. And I think that's part of, I think that will always be the game going forward. I truly do. And that's just going to be part of it. And I can understand why a guy does that. If he loses his job and he's going forward and he's got 1 or 2 years to play, I mean, I get it. I mean, it's not the way it used to be, but that's the way it is, and that's part of it. And you got to manage that part of it going forward, in my opinion, and always be aware of that. And that's why I think you're constantly recruiting quarterbacks, because you don't ever know how many of those guys are going to leave.
Coach, we'll go over along our right side, second row.
Hey, Coach, Bruce Marshall at Sports Byline. Quick question. You've spent a lot of your career in the SEC, mm-hmm. and you spent a decade in the ACC. Mm-hmm. Differences between the leagues, speed of the game, tougher, what are your comparisons?
I think both leagues are outstanding. I mean, we had great success when I was at Florida State. I mean, we were in the top 5 or 10 almost every year and won national championship, played for more of them. The SEC, I think, from top to bottom, and I've always said this, I think – everybody has good players. I mean, if from top, not that they don't over there, but it just, the statement, it means more. I think it does. I think these schools take football extremely seriously. It's the number one sport in this league, and almost every school in this league, it's the number one sport, and it's very, very important. But the ACC has a great ball. I've always said that. It competed well, but I mean, from top to bottom, I don't think there's any doubt the SEC is a more thorough conference. Look at the draft picks. When you set a record last year with 64 draft picks. I think the next to it was 40 with the Big Ten, and you got into 29, 26, and 22 in the other three leagues. I mean, three times the number of players, and the atmospheres, environments, the home stadiums, the number of people with games, the coverage. Remember? I mean, it's just, you know, you're under a microscope here, yeah. And it's the best of the best.
Pac-12 at two, yeah. First and last.
Coach, yeah. We'll go over here to our left on the aisle on the third row.
Coach Austin Price, VolQuest.com. Jay Graham's been on your staff for a number of years. Do you see him, you know, kind of escalating and up your?
Oh, no doubt. He's actually our co-offensive coordinator right now.
Okay,
Jay's done a tremendous job recruiting, coaching with our running backs in the situation. The number of backs we had at Florida State and what he's done with those guys, and himself being a great player, he's developed great players, and he has a great mind for the game. It's just not in the backfield. He understands the big picture of the game and how to throw it, how to protect it, how to do everything. And I think, you know, eventually he'll move up as coordinators, and eventually one day be a head coach.
All right, right section, near aisle, third row.
Sorry to bounce back to the transfer conversation.
All right.
But I was wondering, did your experience transferring in college influence kind of how you think about the topic at all?
I'm not going to say it didn't. I think each situation is unique, but probably so. I mean, I think it does. I mean, you know, there's when you're 18 to 22, think of how many different things your mind changes on, and situations occur, things occur. But it's like my father always told me, if you're changing or you're leaving, tell me why. Give me a good reason, not because I feel like it. And two, what's the plan in the other end? See, that the thing that scares me about all the things that's going on now, that I don't think a lot of guys always plan the other end of it out. You know what I mean? And have an idea of where they're going. I think if they do it for why am I going, is there a legit reason for leaving, and what's the plan of where I'm going, I think you got to. And I do with our players. I said, okay, if you're leaving, I get it. Tell me why you're leaving. Now tell me what you want to do and what you're trying to accomplish. And if they can't do that, I say, why don't you go back and think about it? You know what I'm saying? Because I think as coaches, you got to help them make those decisions. And there's guys that you want to talk into, you know, you try to get them to stay. And the other guys, you say, you know, I can see your point. You're going to have a tougher time playing. And, you know, there may be something, if that's what you want to do, you can. But I try to at least make them say that to me, because I want them, because they can get lost out there really quick. Because, you know, there were more guys in the transfer portal than there were available scholarships. So, you know, you got to be honest with those guys. So trying to help them do it, I think, is part of our role as a coach and as coaches, that is very critical in that whole process.
It will go to the very back of the center section.
Hey, Jimbo, Brooks again from The Advocate. Steve Shaw this morning directly referenced the LSU-Texas A&M game, 7 overtimes, as something that changed the rule there. Whenever that game ended, did you leave that thinking this is a game that rules are going to be made off of now?
It didn't shock me. I didn't know if the rule was. I just figured out, I know one thing, I had to make sure I'll have a lot of two-point plays from now on. But I didn't. That wasn't the first thought. It really wasn't. But as it come back, it came up pretty quickly the next day, and people were saying it. And I got to thinking about it. And I said, yeah, I guess it does make sense. But you know, it was that was the game that did it. That's for sure.
We'll go over the right section on the right aisle near the wall.
Colin Dunning with 103.7 The Game. And you were talking about earlier about the fact you have players constantly under 24/7 scrutiny. When you just look at the student-athlete aspect of it, especially with mental health, like Greg Sankey was talking about on Monday, how much do y'all handle that, like, on a regular basis?
Consistently, every day. I've always been a part of that. I learned it a long time ago. And we have sports psychologists, regular psychologists. I mean, we have everything in place. We have condition. We have coaches that people come in and learn it, organize how to structure, how to deal, to deal with everything possible. And that is a huge part of our financial budget. And I think that's a big part of programs. I think those are the kind of programs in place that people who don't have resources really struggle. And I think it hurts college kids. And I think that's always been a huge part of my development of players, is a psychological development, how they handle pressures, deal with issues, deal with all that stuff, different people to talk to, you know, from pastors to sports psychologists, psychologists, all that stuff. It is the biggest problem going. I said this 10 years ago in a meeting one time in the ACC, and people said, well, they kind of laughed. And I said, listen, guys, mental health is a huge part of what's going on right now. And you're 18 to 22 years old. The kids, the things they're facing is 100 times greater than we ever did when we were coming up because of all y'all and the social media and the ability, accessibility and the expectations. It's crazy what these kids go through, and it's a shame sometimes. And my big thing on it, where do they ever get a break? Where does a kid now ever get to be a kid? Where is he allowed to make a mistake without somebody wanting to kick him out, throw him out, or whatever? I mean, these guys are under pressure. That's ridiculous. Where do they ever get to unwind? It's hard, and you got to create things within your program and team events and things for those guys just to have fun and quit worrying about competing. And what the world, what Twitter, the 10,000 followers they got, which they worry about what they think about them more than their mom, dad, and coach.
Boom.
It's crazy. So it's a big part of what we do.
Okay, we'll go up front here and right in front of us, Coach.
John Frary, CBS Sports Radio, St. Augustine. Coach, wanted to ask you about Kellen Mond, one of the players you brought over here, year two of your offense.
I don't think that is a bad hair.
Is there extra stuff you're going to put on his plate this year? How much more comfortable do you think he will be
like
in your offense?
And
how
CBS
much more,
Radio, St. Augustine.
I guess, innovations will be in it?
Well, I think it is, but I also, you talk about innovation, we talk about plays, but also it's decisions within a play. There's a lot of things within a play that are accessible that guys aren't ready for. You know, you give them the basic 1-2 read. But if there's certain looks, can you run that same play? And the look on the backside is better than what it is on the front side. Giving him availability to have the five available receivers being able to go to him at any time, or a check that can get us in a run or get us in a right look, or if he sees a certain blitz to take a shot. But also, like I said, you call the play, and you know, it's one or two. But now if you do get these matchups, you may get 1, 2, 3, or 4. And expanding, you know, it's just like I say, you take Algebra 1. Algebra doesn't change, but Algebra 2 just gets more complicated. You know what I'm saying? You just keep adding the more to the formula as you go. And I think that's where he's getting to. And I'll tell you what, he's been really fun to work. He understands that he has to be a student of the game. And I think that's the most fun we have, because he understands how to – not he works his tail off. Nobody works any harder. But he also works on the film room too. And that's where the – and you know from the conversations you have with him, the questions he asked you, and it's starting to really be fun. And he's being able to use all the resources around him.
All right, we'll take one final question over here from Bob on the second row.
Bob!
Let's go. Hey, Jimbo.
Yes, sir.
You know, real history, Arkansas played 2-7 overtime games. In 2003, they had a 7-OT game at Kentucky, and they played a Thursday night that following week and beat South Carolina. And back in 2001, they had Ole Miss, and they beat UCF the next week.
Houston had both those, didn't they?
Yeah. You know, knowing what you went through, if you guys obviously didn't have to play till the bowl, how impressive is that to you that Arkansas was able to win?
Extremely impressive.
Especially 5 days later.
Well, I think it's impressive by the players, and I think it's impressive by your coach, because managing in that and how to get them ready without wearing them out is a big part of that, too, and how he probably practiced and probably made some changes or adjustments during that time. That would be
a
very tough thing.
All right, let's bring it back here. That is Jimbo Fisher, the head coach of Texas A&M.
Not a great final question.
No, that was not a great final.
He was 1-for-3, that guy.
But yeah, that old guy. But I will tell you this.
Some interesting
stuff. Earlier
stuff.
Today with Jeremy Pruitt, we bailed on it because it was boring. No. I was glued. And if I'm glued, I got a feeling I think the audience was.
I am. There's a lot of great stuff. Like Ed O'Sron yesterday and Dan Mullen. Jimbo did on a number of issues. And when we come back, I got some numbers. And you talk about what coaching means. Just from these are numbers stuff. You'll be shocked when I give you the difference between what he went through and what his predecessor did not do.
Oh, that should be good because I was living in Texas when that happened. All right, that'll be good. And I thought he had some wonderful things to say. Yes, Kevin Sumlin. And I think he had some wonderful things to say about the transfer portal and also mental health with the student athletes.
And social media again, very much reiterating what Dan Mullen was talking about.
All right, all that when we come back, plus your reaction, 239-337-ESPN. Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
One of them thinks cooking is cool. The other thinks white tube socks are. This is Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Sheeman and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app. We're going Betty Davis eyes here?
Kim Carnes. This song was number one, I think, at one point set a record at 10 or 11 weeks. I think Diana Ross's Upside Down followed it with number one on Casey Kasem's Top 40 back in the day.
Wow, just went through a time capsule.
Yeah. Wow. Always loved Kim. Love that voice. Very sultry.
Is she like a three-hit wonder?
She had a few.
Kind of like a female Rod Stewart.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, good analogy.
Great analogy. Rod had more hits. Kim had some... She had a few good hits, and she did a couple of good duos, too.
Not bad. All right, we just listened to Jimbo Fisher talk from SEC kickoff day number two. We piggyback. Thank you to the SEC Network for helping us out there. We carried some of that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things I want to talk about. He's first of all, he's a great speaker. He's very engaging. He's a lot better than most. And I thought he had a lot of interesting things, kind of like Ed Ogeron yesterday.
Before you get into that, just a preamble, because this all will tie into what you're about to say. So think about this. Texas A&M had 9 wins last year, the most in 5 years, since 2013.
Yeah.
They clobbered NC State. I thought they clobbered NC State, a decent team, 52-13 in the Gator Bowl. Now, under Kevin Sumlin previously, A&M ranked near the bottom of the conference in terms of time of possession over his last 5 years with the program. Jimbo Fisher, last year, they ranked number one. You know what the average time of possession was in games last year? What? 34 minutes and 31 seconds.
Dominating the ball.
Number one.
Wow.
Last year, the Aggies allowed 192.4 yards on the ground per contest. That was 13 Sumlin's years. 192.4 during Sumlin's years. Texas A&M, that was, near the bottom, 13th. Last year, under Jimbo, second in the conference, third in the nation, with 95.2 rushing yards allowed per game. They went down basically 100 yards. 100 yards less.
I have no explanation for Kevin Sumlin, because I lived in Texas at the time. I actually met Kevin Sumlin at a party, because when I knew him, it was his last year at UH. He did great there, and to the point where he got taken away. He got offered a big contract to leave UH and kind of make them what they are today. Took the A&M job, got paid. Started off with gangbuster. I think he won like 9 or 10 games his first year. Everybody thought they were crazy moving into the SEC. Johnny Manziel comes on the scene. He got a Heisman Trophy winner. And the wheels just fell off.
Yeah.
I mean, it was almost like he lost control. All this quarterback started transferring out. I don't know what the problem was. And he's doing an okay job. He's at Arizona now. I don't know. I can't explain that. But certainly there's a difference between Kevin Sumlin and Jimbo Fisher.
And then you look at the A&M schedule. They start off with a blowout against Texas State. Then they got a trap game at Clemson before they take on Lamar.
That was one of the best games last year.
Oh, absolutely.
The Clemson A&M game at A&M. By the way, I told you, I went to one A&M game my last year in Texas.
Yeah, you brought your daughter, you said, right?
Yes. And what did I tell you? What was
you said it was stinky.
It was a little stinky because it's a bunch of farm territory out there, and you smell the cows.
But unbelievable fans.
Huge fan base.
Yep.
Just the stadium, the inside, the atmosphere, fantastic. But regarding the smell and the cow, I saw a crawl during Jimbo's little press conference there, a little fun fact. He bought a heifer this offseason.
Yeah.
That's a cow, by the way, for these of you who don't know. He spent $80,000 to buy a cow. Its name is Ruby. I don't know what you need to do with it. I don't know if he's making steaks or selling milk.
What was the cow that Billy Crystal had, the big calf in City Slickers? Norman? I think his name was Norman.
I don't remember.
Do you remember when he delivered the cow with Jack Palance?
Yeah, I remember the scene. I don't remember the name. That's clear.
He came out. I remember it was burst. He's like, he's bursting grabbers. He's bursting. He's like, there's going to be bursting. And he takes his hands out of the cow's uterus and his water. Ugh. And he brings the cow. And they have to shoot the mother because she was suffering. He goes, why did you do that? And then he says, I made a cow. Jack Palance says, it looks like you. What a great movie.
Good times.
Anyway.
A couple of very interesting and serious topics that he talked about. First of all, he was asked, what about all these kids in the transfer portal? That's like the new thing. Kids transferring out. They're leaving if they can't compete for their position. He said, look, I understand it. It happens. But the first two things I ask them are, why are you transferring? And then what's the plan on the back end? And if you don't have an answer, you go home and think about it for a couple of days. I want to make the kid come back and tell me.
And he basically said, don't do it. Just basically, just because.
Right.
Because you're unhappy, because you may not start. I just don't, where the competitive spirit, where is it gone? Or is it that absolute behind the scenes on these Division I rosters that we just don't know about? Like, it's like political. That coach ain't going to budge. I mean, are they
alluded to that.
Are they that inflexible now? Is that what is happening? I don't know if I buy that altogether.
Well, he alluded to that. And he goes, look, only one guy plays quarterback on a team for the most part. You stick with him, barring an injury. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking if you're the number two guy on the depth chart, you hang around. You never know. It's football, for crying out loud. But here's the other thing. They're just recruiting, trying to recruit so many 4- and 5-star. I mean, every year they're recruiting quarterbacks.
Yeah.
You know, they're afraid guys will leave and then they'll be caught in a lurch. But then you recruit so many quarterbacks, These kids don't have a chance to play.
Well, here's the thing. And Ed Orgeron, by the way, another little fun facts they keep putting on the bottom of screens.
Yeah.
We missed this one yesterday. I was watching Ed Orgeron again this morning at 6:15. And a little blurb came up. He once ate a worm, an earthworm, in front of his kids as a motivational tactic, if that means anything.
Ate a worm. Ed Orgeron ate a worm?
Had a worm hanging from his mouth, an earthworm, and used it as a motivational
tactic. That's disgusting.
Well,
Was it like a standard little brown earthworm?
I don't know.
Earthworm?
They didn't show it. It was just a little blurb on the bottom.
Sometimes you eat one that's the wrong kind. It's got all poison on it, and then you like die.
Eat one that's the wrong kind. I like my worms al dente. I mean, you know, little garlic and olive oil with mine.
Disgusting.
Anyway, what are you saying?
I saw the winner Wimbledon wouldn't eat grass. And then the other thing I thought he brought up a good point was, he used to be laughed at as an assistant coach mentioning this, but he thinks the number one biggest problem for these 18, 19, 20-year-old kids is mental health. They don't get a break. It's nonstop. It's always competitive. Then you throw in the social media.
That's where it is.
The people judging them there. And it ties in perfectly to we were kind of flabbergasted by the amount of time Dan Mullen and Felipe Franks were talking about, hey, I got to get off social media because it's affecting me.
Well, Dan Mullen said, Felipe Franks, get off social media and stop chatting. And like Jimbo just said, you stop looking at the 10,000 followers that you have and of what they think or don't think about you. Who cares? Don't look at it.
Yeah.
At least during the season. Don't look at it.
Yeah. I'll point out one other thing that you may not have noticed, maybe did, but and there was a time earlier when he was talking about the budding rivalry with A&M and LSU.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I'll go ahead, having lived in the area, and they beat LSU last year. Most of the people in Houston is a cosmopolitan city. There's people from all over the world because of the oil business, the energy business. But the largest chunk of population of people that I ever knew in the whole Houston area when I lived there were from New Orleans and Louisiana and Baton Rouge. And the reason from that is because of Hurricane Katrina. An entire population of people had to transplant. They had to leave. They had to move. They all ended up in Houston looking for jobs and places to live. Yeah, there are Houston Texans fans, but the number two most watched team in that market is the New Orleans Saints.
So, I believe it.
Again, A&M and LSU, that is a natural rivalry that is budding and up and coming. That's something to keep on. But a little background for you as to why maybe that is the case. It doesn't appear that A&M has any interest in the rivalry with Texas. He's more interested in the rivalry with LSU.
You could tell that. I mean, this animosity there, it's there's no question. There's something going on. Something happened behind. There's some bad blood there. But again, like here, It's too bad because it's great for the sport. It's great for the state of Texas, obviously.
Pretty much said, we're scheduled out for the next 10 years if we can work it out fine.
Yeah, which screams to me, you know, not really. Yeah. Not sure I really want
to. Well, not on his watch.
No.
He's 10 years, 75. He's down to 9 years and $60-some million, $68 million mm-hmm. left on his deal. But it ain't going to happen on his watch.
Yep.
All right. There is still another coach to speak today.
Yep.
Matt Luke at Ole Miss. We'll keep an eye out for that. Of course, Nick Saban is tomorrow.
When are we carrying the Hugh Freeze press conference for the Mighty Liberty, which we'll be following all year long, by the way? But you already have the upper hand on our sandwich bet.
He's going to leave.
He's not going to leave.
He's leaving.
He's not leaving.
What is our bet? That he leaves before Gruden or
something? Yeah, no, Gruden gets fired before him.
Okay.
But Chris and I, we talked about this last week, Rick, is that if he leaves, we've determined that if he does leave to go back to a Power 5, then
would Liberty fire Hugh Freeze?
They wouldn't.
They're a religious school, and if he starts doing hookers again, yeah, that'd be a problem.
He wasn't doing relaxation therapy. But did you know he got his first whale? The kid from Auburn, the quarterback, transferred there.
Yeah.
You were gone when that happened.
Yeah.
That was the same day what was it? Oh, yeah, it was the same day that Daryl Mack at UCF broke his ankle.
Yeah. There are no relaxation therapists at Liberty. They're not allowed.
Yep, Auburn quarterback Malik Willis transferring to Liberty.
All right.
Huge.
His first whale. There you go. All right, boys and girls, look at the clock. Oh, my goodness.
It is
time for Wikipedia. Rick Church has a whole sack full of goodies for you.
I do. I got Rays tickets for this weekend against the White Sox.
All right, the Sox.
Let's do that.
All right, so caller number 9. Today is the 50-year anniversary of the launch to the moon. So we've got some lunar trivia coming up. Stump Pete Shepard. Stump the Shep. That's next. Caller number 9. 239-337-ESPN. 239-337-3776. Sheeman and Shepard, 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.
Think you got what it takes to stump the Shep? Shooter shoot. And here's your shot. It's Wikipedia.
All right, here we go. Southwest Florida, time for our favorite game of the day. Wikipedia. Stump Pete Shepard with trivia. Today is the 50-year anniversary of the launch, the actual launch to the moon. So we're doing lunar trivia today. Caller number 9 is Nick in Fort Myers. Nick, how are you?
Hey, Nick.
Good. How are you?
Very good. Nick, how old are you?
30.
Ooh, this is way before your time. All right, we'll see how we do. What do you do for a living, Nick?
I'm the manager for Next Level Detailing.
Okay. Cool. All right, very good. All right, first one to 3 correct answers is the winner. Nick, you get to go first. Nick, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon in the lunar capsule. Who stayed behind in the lunar orbiter?
I have no idea.
Pete Shepard, would you like to take a stab at the lesser-known astronaut?
Who? Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin.
Jethro Tull wrote a song about him and his loneliness.
And he's a famous caddy now.
Ooh.
Famous caddy?
I'm kidding.
A famous caddy?
Pete can't score the point anyway, so it's not like I'm...
No, I know.
Craig kind of gave me a look like I was...
No, I didn't give you a look. I'm going to tell you because you're not going to guess it.
There's one guy I know. I know there's actually a Shepard, an Alan Shepard. I know that because Howard Stern referenced once in his show. Robin did. She said Pete Shepard. Robin corrected her and said... Howard corrected her and said,
really?
That's a guy, sports guy in Boston. Yes, way back.
Really? You got that on tape somewhere?
I had somewhere I do have it. Somebody sent it to me. I didn't hear it myself. But what's that guy's Bean? I know there's a Bean and a Shepherd. I know those two.
Michael Collins is the name we're looking for. Michael Collins.
Oh.
You know, how do they work that? Who did he draw the short straw like the other two guys get to go on the moon and he's going to stay back?
I don't know.
All right. Pete Shepherd, this question is for you. Mm-hmm. How long, and you can just give me a range. You don't have to get it exact. How long did it take to get to the moon? We launched 50 years ago today. How long did it take to get there?
Oh, God.
I know I'm going to need the correct days, not the hours and minutes. I'll fill you in on that. Just ballpark me. Give me the how many days to the moon?
Three?
I'm going to give Nick a chance to steal. That is not the correct answer. Nick, how long does it take to get to the moon, or at least did it in 1969?
Well, you can go faster now.
Probably. 400 days? I don't know.
400 days?
That's
we're not going to
year.
Mars, my man. We're going to the moon.
I have no idea.
The correct answer is 4 days, 6 hours and 45 minutes. I would have accepted 4 days.
I missed by a day.
You did. Well, that's quite a bit.
All right.
All right, 0-0. Really. All right, let's see. Nick, your turn here. Nick has no chance at this. Nick, what were the first...
Why would you do that?
Because he's struggling with the... This one's a little harder.
Oh, jeez.
What? This happened 30 years
I
before
I think this
was,
one's the easiest.
This is 30 years before he was born.
So all what?
Right, Nick, what were the first words spoken on the moon?
One small step for man, or one giant leap for mankind?
Yes.
That is incorrect.
Oh, it's close enough.
That is incorrect. That was much later. Contact light. After they landed on the ground, he said, contact light. Like they didn't crash or anything.
You have that's one small step for man in your answers.
There are four options there. The one that is highlighted in darker print, contact light.
Well, wait a second. But no one ever quotes contact light. Was that he hadn't stepped on. That's been maybe landed on the moon.
I told
but not when he stepped onto the moon itself.
I'm in charge here. What were the first words spoken on the moon?
I told that a bad feeling about this right from the start.
Was Neil Armstrong on the moon when he said contact light? I don't think so.
He wasn't physically. His ship was on the moon.
Well, his ship was on the moon, but a lot of things could have been said if you go by that.
I overrule.
Like, holy bleep. I can't believe we did this. Nick, I'm well. You know what? I think you should get the
and
point.
And by the way, it was Aldrin that said contact light. All right. Whose turn is it? Anyway?
No one knows that.
I think
that.
It's Pete's.
It's my turn, yeah.
All right, Pete Shepard.
Contact light.
I'm going to give Nick an asterisk in case it comes down to
it. Half point.
All right. I actually know this. This is a fact that's not well known, but maybe you know this. What did Buzz Aldrin do shortly after the lunar module landed? Did something very prolific inside the capsule, and that's all I'll tell you.
The lunar... oh, my goodness. Jeez, what did he... say? Repeat the question one more time.
What did Buzz Aldrin do shortly after the lunar module landed? He did an act right there and he did something, and that's all I'm going to tell you.
I'll tell you why I remember this. First of all, I love Buzz Aldrin. He's my favorite astronaut. Because I'm a Star Trek geek. I'm a Star Trek geek, and back in the 70s, he would always talk about it. And I know it came up since I went to a Catholic school.
Hey!
And he took communion.
Yes! Yes, that is the correct answer.
Who knows that but me?
Well, me, I did. But
well, yeah.
Yes, he brought a small communion kit with him, being Catholic, but he did not read any Bible verses aloud because recently, this happened back then too.
Well, no, because Project Light had already been said, so what the hell else do you need to say?
Well, no, there was a lawsuit from a woman filed against Apollo 8 astronauts for reading Bible verses.
What?
They were politically correct back then. Yes, he took communion. How about
24/7 says we're going to need a bigger boat. Yeah.
We're going to need more time as well. All right, Nick, it is your question. Pete has a 1-0 lead.
Pull that one.
Let's see. Oh, Nick, what did the astronauts eat when they were on the moon?
What happened to the music?
We ran out,
but I'm re-queuing it.
Yeah, so
just
long.
Re-queue it, yeah.
That's all right.
The only thing I know about is they drink or Tang or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I would have said Tang, too, but that's not it.
That's not the actual correct answer. By the way, Buzz Aldrin said he hated Tang. They had two meal options. One, the main dish being bacon squares, and the other one was beef stew. That's it.
Oh, God.
All right, what else we got here?
What's the score?
Well, it's 1-0, but you wanted
one
to give,
to a half.
You wanted to give Nick the asterisk for, you know, I'm going to give Nick that point for one small
are.
Step.
Yep.
For, yeah, all right. Yeah, right
you
right,
should.
Right. So it's a 1-1 tie. All right, so the next question is for you, Pete Shepard.
All right.
When Buzz Aldrin exited the space capsule,
mm-hmm.
something went very wrong. Do you know what that was? He did not tell anybody about it until he got back.
When he exited the space capsule, he locked himself out?
No.
Hang on. He didn't trip.
Much worse than that.
He didn't trip because we're known. Left the no smoking sign on? No. Hang on. Something. Say the question again.
All right. When Buzz Aldrin exited the space capsule to go onto the moon, something bad happened. Something malfunctioned. He didn't.
He left the engine on.
No, that's not it. Nick, could you take a stab at it? What went wrong with Buzz Aldrin when he got on the moon?
Left the engines on? I have no
that's what I
he was forced to play Wikipedia.
Yeah, he jumped out and he landed so hard that a tube that contained his urine collection system, it broke, and so then when he had to relieve himself, all he did was fill his boot with pee, and it was there for the rest of the deal.
What alternate answers would you accept a pee malfunction?
Wow. Yeah, some sort of pee malfunction.
Wardrobe malfunction has been acceptable, I think. Well,
all right, Nick, back to you.
I did not know that.
So when Neil Armstrong took his one giant leap for mankind.
Yeah, that little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How far was it? Like, was it 6 inches? Was it 5 feet? Give me something.
Let's go with 4 feet.
Ooh. You know what? Let's round up.
Let's give it to him.
It's 3.5 feet.
I mean, Nick deserves it.
Nick deserves it. I'm going to give Nick a 2-1 lead. Here's the deal. It was a little further than he had planned, and so it was more of a big jump. It was a 3.5 foot jump.
Less weight.
Yeah, exactly.
On the moon.
Yeah. Well, the capsule landed so softly that the shock absorbers didn't compress. So it was a further jump than they anticipated. All right, Pete Shepard, your chance to tie.
Yeah.
Why didn't the astronauts shake Richard Nixon's hand after they were plucked from the ocean on the USS Hornet?
Probably because I'm just saying from all the movies I've watched that it probably had to be decontaminated or something like that.
Yes, that is the correct answer. All right. I've got a bonus question here to break the tie, Nick. This is for you.
Oh, goodness. More questions?
Who starred in Capricorn 1? Who is the lead role in Capricorn 1?
Never seen it. No idea.
Pete, do you know?
Capricorn 1. Was that like James Caan?
No.
It was some obscure actor, but it wasn't like Dustin Hoffman. It was. You know what? I don't. I mean, you tell me, I'm going to know. I don't think I've ever seen it.
It says here O.J. Simpson.
Oh, yes!
O.J. Simpson!
Oh, you're right.
It was considered his best acting performance until he got in front of an L.A. jury. All right, this is the latest we've ever been for a break. Nick, we're going to give you the prize. Stay on hold. Thanks for playing Wikipedia.
I'm going to moon Craig.
Sheeman and Shepard on 99.3 ESPN and the 99.3 ESPN app.